from the Star Rentals Sports Desk. Your 93.3 KJR-FM Sports Headlines.
All righty, boys and girls, here we go. Headlines on a gorgeous Tuesday afternoon right here on Softy and Dick, brought to you by our friends at VenueKings.com.
Unvaccinated folks.
You looking for tickets for the Mariner homestand after the All-Star break against the Astros to start off on that Friday? VenueKings.com has tickets for under $20 right now on the website. Be sure and use code Softy at checkout for a little bit of a discount. Well, nothing happening in D.C. as of right now with the Mariners. That game is in a serious rain delay as we speak right now. Mariners 45-42 on the road again, starting a six-game road trip. Chris Flexen was set to start the game tonight. But again, as of right now, no baseball being played in D.C. because of weather.
Huskies have received a commitment from three-star defensive lineman Alenius Davis from Moorhead, Minnesota. Here's a little nugget from Christian Capel. The last letterman from Minnesota for the Huskies was in 1998, a guy that I have never heard of. Defensive lineman Judd Seda.
Judd Seda. So here's the thing. Capel could be making that up, and you'd have no idea.
I have no idea, because I've never heard of Judd Seda.
Scores are on baseball. Reds and Yankees also delayed at the in the Bronx. Pirates lead the Marlins 3-1, bottom of the fifth. Blue Jays up on the Phillies 2-1 after three from Toronto, where there is no rain delay because they have a roof, by the way. Rays and Red Sox after three are scoreless in Tampa, and the White Sox lead the Guardians 4-0. All right, joining us right now on the radio show, always fun to have him on the program. And we always appreciate how much this guy says yes. I got to be honest with you. I feel bad all the times we ask Randy Mueller to come on the radio show. It's like we just keep going back to the same well over and over again. But
it's a good well, though.
I keep looking for somebody better than Randy, and I can't find it. So I'm sorry. If you weren't such a damn good guest on the air, Randy, we'd stop calling you.
You guys are too kind. I always love being on with you. It's a home game for me, so. Never an issue.
Well, beautiful. I love it. It's great to have you back on the show. And first of all, man, before we talk about all the rumors about Garoppolo and DK Metcalf and his contract situation, did the Seahawks do the right thing in not going after Baker Mayfield and giving up what Carolina gave up, in your opinion?
Well, that is a tough one to answer, to be honest with you. I think it's a bold thing. I'll give them that. I don't know if I could have done it. I think they're all in with what they have now. I think their plan on quarterback is if these two guys don't work out, that they'll draft somebody in 2023. Most franchises aren't that patient, as evidenced by what happened in Carolina. I think Dave Tepper, their owner, they've swung and missed a couple times at quarterbacks. They were going to find a way to upgrade their room. I do think Baker would have helped the Seahawks, without a doubt. Obviously, it sounds like they were interested if he were on the street. I think the $19 million is the catch point, right? I think it's easier to negotiate from zero up than $19 million down. So that was probably where they came into play. I think it's a good move for Carolina. I think they actually upgrade with a sense of urgency right now that they've got to do something. There are jobs on the line. I think in Pete and John's case, they've had 10 years of a good run, so they can be more selective. That's not the norm around the league. So I think Baker on a one-year deal, I could have bought into that for sure. I think you're going to get the best Baker you can get. I think the offense is going to be suited for him in Carolina. I think it would have been the same in Seattle. I think Baker on a one-year deal for $4 million is a pretty good bargain, I'll say that.
Do you think Jimmy Garoppolo on a one-year deal is a good bargain?
Not at $25 million. That's
no, sure. No. That's what, it would have to be a more similar to Baker deal.
Yeah, I think it's definitely an upgrade from where they are now. The problem is I think Garoppolo's demise may have started a couple years ago on a Monday night against the Seahawks. So they've seen him at his worst, but I do think he upgrades him. I mean, there's been some reports that 49ers are going to trade him. I don't know where the market is for Jimmy Garoppolo right now. I don't see it being in Houston. I don't see it being in Cleveland for different reasons. But I don't know where they trade this guy. I just don't see the market for his number, for his salary being available. So obviously Jimmy will have some say in it because he'll have to rework his cap number if they indeed trade him. But I'll be honest, I've said all along, and I'm on an island here, I wouldn't trade him if I was them, and I would keep him if I was a 49er just as insurance against Trey Lance because I'm not ready to drink that Kool-Aid yet that Trey Lance is the answer.
Yeah. Well, Jimmy Garoppolo in six games against the Hawks is 1-5 with five touchdowns and five picks. So that's what Pete Carroll's been looking at with Jimmy Garoppolo. Yep. And I guess my radar, Randy, and again, Randy Mueller with us on the air, my radar kind of goes up where I say, why do the Niners want to dump this guy? Why did they move up to get Trey Lance when they had Jimmy Garoppolo? So if Kyle Shanahan doesn't want Jimmy Garoppolo, why would I want Jimmy Garoppolo?
Yeah, I don't think he's the long-term answer. I think it depends on where you are, where your franchise is. I think that's been proven out over time that he's lacking. I felt like when Jimmy was playing on a regular basis, Kyle had to kind of really watch how he called the game.
Yeah.
He had to be protective of certain things. And you guys remember this. The Monday night game from a couple years ago when the Seahawks went after him, they really affected the way Kyle called that game. And I think that's always been in the back of Kyle's head. I think he's just had enough of Jimmy. So I agree with you. I don't think he's the answer. It all depends on what your options are in your room currently.
He's 31-14 as a starter, though. I do think, and I'm not a Jimmy Garoppolo fan, but I am going to defend him for a second. I mean, you can't just be a putz, no matter how good your team is around you, and be 31-14 as a starter, particularly when Kyle Shanahan puts somebody else behind center. You can't win a game.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think, in the right situation, he helps Seattle. I think it's a one-year deal, though. That's the downside, and I don't know that he's a long-term answer. So you're putting a Band-Aid on something that you might fix. So if you look at it one step further removed, maybe he helps them win a couple more games. Is that good or bad if they're fixing the draft one the following spring?
Yeah, Randy, I just wonder, because you've been around the facility, obviously, going back to the old Northwest College days, I believe. That's how long you've been around for. And you used to have discussions about a lot of guys, right? Go to the cafeteria, grab a Diet Coke, grab a sandwich, and just, you know, shoot the you-know-what about this guy or that guy with coaches, GMs, whoever. Is this that with Jimmy Garoppolo, Pete and John just maybe kicking up their feet and just, you know, having some fun and chatting about Jimmy? Or do you believe internally that there is actually serious interest and discussions in finding a way to get Jimmy Garoppolo to Seattle?
Well, I think the only way that becomes realism is if they release him.
Right.
Right now the 49ers are talking about trading him. So if you assume at some point he gets cut, I think that the discussion would have had to have happened. I do believe that they are convinced that the guys they have in the room, that they're going to give them an opportunity. Hey, they went out of their way to make a highlight tape of Drew Locke, and I've never seen anything like that, and circulate it for people to understand what they're dealing with. So I get it. I understand that. They're into it. The rumors are that John loved him at Missouri. I get it. But there's been 3 years of tape since then as well. So I'm all for conviction and confidence in your evaluations, but at some point you either got to get better or you're getting worse, and I haven't seen Drew progress. There's been reasons. I know they'll find some reasons that Denver let him down. We'll see. It's a gamble on my part to just roll it out there with Geno and Drew Locke and expect that, you know, you're going to get through this season, even if you win 5 or 6 games. And what's Vegas have them at 5.5, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's the over and under. So obviously the rest of the world, it has questions about the Seahawks and where they're at.
Randy Mueller, former NFL GM, our friend joining us here on 93.3 KJR FM. So let's talk about Locke and Geno in terms of how much unknown is there still in those two guys to Randy Mueller, NFL scout?
I don't think there's any unknown for me. I mean, I've looked a lot of film on both of them. Drew, I understand. I see the live arm. I see the ability to make all the throws from the pocket. I see that. But then I see the short circuits. I see the bad decision making. I see the missing of wide open people, the inconsistencies. And he just hasn't come out of that after 3 years. So I see the arm talent, believe me. It's just the other stuff, and it's really the decision making that I struggle with. So maybe they can find a way in this offense to get him to process information differently so that the results are different. But he definitely has to change his processing mode in order to get better, because it hasn't worked to this date. Geno, I think we know he played a little bit the last couple years. He's fine. He can operate the offense. No problem there. I just don't know that that's the answer that I want going forward. In a division where they're struggling every week to win games in their own division, you've got to have that guy, and I'm not sure if they have it right now.
Yeah, well, I mean, look, you know, I also got concerns about the guy that's coaching him. I mean, you know, Shane Waldron may or may not be a great OC down the road, but you're asking really a rookie first-year offensive coordinator who's got 1 year under his belt to be the guy that is the difference for Drew Lock coming out of Denver. So we'll see. But you, Randy, mentioned something there about the highlight video the Hawks sent out about Drew Lock. You're talking about something on social media. I've been out of the loop the last week with some family stuff going on. So what do you mean by that?
Oh, I think that came out a while back. That came out a month or so ago. And I think it was just an effort to show people the talent that Drew Lock is.
And yeah.
I can see it. I mean, we all see it. So I don't think that is nothing new. I think there are question marks around the Seahawks offense. And everybody from the outside sees them. It's a matter of if they can put some of those question marks to rest when they get rolling here in the next week or two.
Yeah, and that's the other question, man. Randy Mueller again with us. Training camp is going to open up in a couple of weeks, and as of right now, DK Metcalf does not have a contract past 2022. Do you expect DK Metcalf to be here for training camp without a deal?
I don't know. I don't know what makes him tick. I'm not familiar with his group, his agents. I get nervous when Pete talks about it a lot, you know, about the contract and the situation and all that. I would rather nobody say a word about it, but I understand that's the method they've used. That's a good question. I get nervous, and I still would be nervous if I were a GM today in writing checks to non-quarterbacks for $25, $30 million per year. I don't care what they do. There's certain things that defenses can do to take away that weapon, and I just don't know that DK is polished enough to adjust off of that and still make the plays that everybody's accustomed to seeing him make. I don't put him in that echelon of the A.J. Browns and the Tyreek Hills and those guys. I don't think he's to that level yet. So I guess to answer your question, it all depends on the money, and I don't know where they're at. I know this, that a holdout probably won't serve him good. Yeah. The Seahawks have been really good at making their best offer before the guy can hold out. So it's not going to change by holding out, wouldn't think.
Right.
I mean, I worked with Matt Thomas for several years in Miami, so I know how they do contracts, and that makes a lot of sense to me.
Would you be happy as a Seahawks fan if he was slotted in that Terry McLaurin $22-23 million average annual value range?
Yeah, I think that's probably where it's at. I think McLaurin, if you're really breaking it down as an NFL evaluator, is probably a little more polished, a little further down the road, a little bit more body work per se that I've seen anyway, a little more consistent. So, yeah, I would think that's probably the range we're talking.
Yeah. So here's my concern about DK Metcalf, Randy. And again, Randy Mueller is with us on the air, and I've said this to these guys many, many times. I love DK Metcalf. I think DK Metcalf is about as unguardable a wide receiver in the NFL, and I wish Russell Wilson had more faith in him when he looked like he was covered to just get the guy the damn football, and I'm hoping that whoever the next quarterback is can think that way. My concern, though, with paying DK Metcalf that kind of money is that he will never be able to realize his potential as long as he plays for Pete Carroll. Am I crazy?
No, I think that's a reasonable, you know, doubt. We haven't seen the next level. They're paying him on the come, without a doubt. We just haven't seen the consistency. And again, you hit it, Softy. I don't know the offense. I don't know what last year, if you would have taken a snippet of a 2 or 3 week period, you would say this is chaos. I understand where Russell Wilson's coming from sometimes. So they didn't have it rolling. We're not all on the same page a lot of the time. You hope in year two they are. Time will tell. I don't know how DK's numbers are going to go up when the quarterbacks are what we've talked about as well. So they're between a rock and a hard spot, no doubt.
Well, but to your point also, you had some reservations about just DK as a wide receiver. So if you just plopped him on the Kansas City Chiefs, maybe there would be issues there that he can't run all the routes and make all the plays that Andy Reid would want him to make. Is that fair?
No, I think that's a complete honest assessment. I think his game lacks continuity. It lacks all the, you know, I see what fans see, but I look at it different when I watch film on these guys. I do think there's some routes that are missing, and maybe that's just what he is. Maybe you've got to, you know, hone in on the things that he does really good. I'd like to see him make all the catches, you know, but there are adjustments. There is processing that goes on. We don't know from day to day what is being taught and what is being expected,
yep,
making adjustments from play to play. There's a lot of things we don't know. So I have some doubts there. I wouldn't put him in that complete receiver yet, right, as an independent evaluator.
All right, Randy, great stuff, man. Appreciate this. And next time there's a rumor about a quarterback, we'll be sure and call you. So we'll call you tomorrow. All right?
I appreciate it, guys.
Thank you.
All right, buddy. Great stuff. You can follow Randy, by the way, on Twitter. He is a phenomenal follow. There is no question about that. Follow Randy on Twitter at @RandyMueller_. Apparently, Randy Mueller and Randy _ Mueller was taken. So Randy Mueller _ on Twitter. By the way, next time you do a show with Hugh Millen, bring up the whole DK Metcalf can't run the whole route tree thing and then see what happens. I just want you to duck because it's coming. Well, Mount Millen's going to blow at that point. He will tell you he can do everything. Hugh Millen will tell you, whether he's right or wrong, his opinion, and I trust Hugh's opinion about football more than anybody else I know in this business. I'm talking about guys on ESPN, Fox, whatever. He is sensational when it comes to the technical aspect of football. And I think he would tell you that the problem is not DK Metcalf. It's the offense and the quarterback getting him the football and the head coach coaching him. That DK Metcalf is a freaking gazelle that needs to be set free. Mm-hmm. And if you do that to him, you'll have a weapon on your hands that is almost unguardable in the National Football League. So I just get concerned that playing for a conservative guy in nature, which, let's face it, has served Pete Carroll well, right? There's no question about it. His attitude has served him well. And as you said before, when Russell Wilson opened things up, things didn't go that well. Maybe they need another quarterback to open things up. Maybe he wasn't the guy to open things up. I'm curious to see what happens in Denver if Hackett lets him throw it 40 times a game. Does he have those same types of numbers? So I just get concerned that paying him that kind of money needs to be justified by getting the guy the football a little more, and I don't know if that's going to happen here or not.
I agree with Randy Mueller. I haven't seen it from him. I haven't seen this complete wide receiver. Now, maybe Hugh's right. Maybe he can be a complete wide receiver. Mm-hmm. I haven't seen it. Randy Mueller clearly hasn't seen it because he even said if he went to Kansas City, he'd have a concern that he could succeed in that offense.
Are you not seeing it because of him, or are you not seeing it because of the scheme and the coaching and the system that they run?
A guy that is a lot smarter than us just called him not a complete receiver.
Right, but I understand that. But Hugh Millen, who's also smarter than us, would say he's a complete receiver. Right. He would say all those things. So, by the way, they just announced that tonight's game in D.C. has been canceled. No Mariner baseball. I know we're all bummed out about that. I was actually sitting home last night, by the way, on a Monday night, kind of bummed out the M's weren't playing, to be honest with you.
We get two tomorrow.
We get two tomorrow. They're going to have a doubleheader at 12 o'clock and 6 p.m. our time tomorrow with a split doubleheader in Washington, D.C.
Sure, that's our time? Because
Brad Adam, 12:05 p.m. Local time, D.C., yes. 9 o'clock Seattle time and 3 o'clock Seattle time for the split doubleheader in Washington, D.C. So two games tomorrow before the M's take off for Texas. And, you know, there was a question about who was going to start that game tomorrow. Tommy Malone, I think, is going to be the guy, but it depended on how things would go today. Could be a bullpen start. You know, I have no idea what Scott Service has planned now for tomorrow. But tonight's Mariner game has been rained out in D.C., and that's a bummer because now we're getting to that point where it's kind of like destination television. You want to get home and flip on the game, and now we have two nights in a row where the Mariners aren't playing. What are we going to do with ourselves, man? It's a beautiful night.
Well, I don't know. It's 80 degrees. I can think of a few things to do at 7.
I get it, but the fact that they're not playing kind of blows, right?
It does mean I was going to go home and hope to catch the end of it, right? Because now tomorrow doesn't get to catch any of it. There's Sounders tomorrow. Don't get to watch them at all.
Yeah, poor you.
It makes me mad.
Yeah. No, I'm with you. I love it. This is the way we should feel.
Yes.
We're supposed to be bummed out when the Mariners get rained out.
I was looking forward to watching. It was going to be on during our show, so that's kind of a break for us, actually, because now we get two games we get one at 9 a.m. tomorrow. I mean, that's the perfect time to be watching Mariner baseball, at least for our time frame. But, hey, we only get so many 80 degrees 7 p.m., so I was probably going to be outside a lot at 7 p.m. anyway, regardless of whether it was baseball.
Listen to the game, whatever, take your phone with you. How about a transistor radio? People still use transistor radios. So. You know what I found yesterday? I found my Discman. You know what a Discman is? You have any idea, Jackson, what a Discman is?
None.
You ever heard of CDs?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. I was about ready. I was going to make a joke there, but there's no.
Huh? He's never real. Is he joking that he's never seen a Discman before?
I don't. I have no idea. I know what a Walkman is. I don't know what a Discman is.
Portable CD player.
It's basically a Walkman that holds a CD player.
Yeah,
Sony
I used to have one
Discman.
Of those. Yeah,
Discman. Right. Okay. I found mine the other day, and that's how I listen to CDs now. Just plug that thing in there with like an RCA cable into the input on the back of my receiver. Disc Man.
Well, I mean, like,
that's the way to roll, baby.
And for Dick, I mean, like, okay, you're gonna be outside, but you have a thing called a smartphone, right? I know that, yeah. I know you're old, but you're not that old, right? You have a smartphone.
Yeah,
yeah. You can bring up the whatever mobile app or Xfinity, whatever you want, and watch the Mariner game on your phone outside.
I'm glad you brought that.
I've done that. I've done that many
times.
Glad
you brought that up. Is there any way to watch the Mariner game on your phone when you're not at home?
I mean, I have Fubo, and for Fubo, you can take it on the go and watch.
Why
right
is there not a Root Sports app that Xfinity customers can watch the baseball game on their phone?
Why don't you just get a Sling Box? I mean, I've got one. They're like $50 now. I'll buy you one. I'll buy you a Sling Box. Do you have a Sling Box?
Don't.
I will buy you a Sling Box. It's the best. I mean, you hook it up to your TV, and you can watch whatever's on your TV. Anything on your TV you can watch wherever you are.
That's good stuff.
So like you're on the road or whatever, you're in Australia, you can dial it up and you could watch your TV, and if you got problems changing the channel because the bandwidth isn't big enough, just call home and say, "Hey honey, can you put on the Mariner game for me?" And then you can watch it on your phone. It's freaking awesome. Good. It actually is a pretty cool piece of technology. All right, 521. We'll react to what Randy Mueller told us about Jimmy Garoppolo. Mariners rained out tonight. Lots of discussion today about Washington and where they go from here. The Michigan State game, we talked about that. We're going to head to Charlotte at about 6:05, 6:10 tonight and talk about Baker Mayfield bringing all the peanuts and the circus with him to Charlotte in Carolina. What's the future for Sam Darnold as well? Coming up around 6:10 tonight right here on Sports Radio 93.3 KJR FM.
Hear us anywhere, anytime on Alexa or Google Play at Sports Radio 93.3 KJR FM and on the iHeartRadio app. Now, back to Softy and Dick.
All right, big thanks to Randy Mueller for joining us on the air. Last segment, you missed it. Check out the podcast page. Always free because...
Why would anybody pay for this crap?
If we actually started charging people to hear our podcast, what kind of downloads do you think we'd get? What kind of business do you think we'd get for the Softy and Dick store?
I think at least four.
Four per year? Or four total.
Four total.
Like your parents and my parents?
That's about
four.
It.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's it. Maybe every now and then Jackson's dad steps in, my dad steps out, your mom steps in, my mom steps out, whatever.
He only listens to Sounder stuff.
If really? Okay. If we can charge.
Well, your dad thinks we work for 710, so that's fine.
That's true.
Whatever.
Is that right?
Oh, yeah.
You were at my wedding, weren't you?
Are you kidding me?
No.
Oh, this is great. My dad's going to hate this, and he tell listens him the story. To KJR a lot.
Tell him the story about what happened.
So
go ahead.
My dad gets up for the speech, and it's written the other way. But he gets up for the speech, and I don't know, what, a dozen KJR people are right there. And, you know, he's talking about my life and, you know, viewing my career. And then he says, and then Jackson went to Cairo.
Oh, and you're Softy, like, when did that happen?
And we all just lose it. Softy goes up and throws a napkin at his face.
I almost punched the guy.
It is hilarious.
At his own kid's wedding. Right in the face.
My and then I go to my dad afterwards. I hug him and I say, give me your sheet. Show me what you wrote. And he wrote KJR.
Yeah.
So I just go, why were you, what are you doing?
That what was your wedding date?
It was Labor Day of 2016.
Yeah, pretty funny.
Oh, yeah,
moment,
I was
man.
Gone.
Very, very funny. Anyway, well, Robert Krohn was with us, and he is the director of scouting for the Kraken. And he said, look, everyone's talking about this Shane Wright guy, but this Furkus guy we got with the second pick, he's going to be better than Shane Wright.
Liar!
Yeah.
Liar!
Yeah.
Liar!
He actually said that on the air. He said, look, the Shane Wright thing was just a smokescreen. And you asked a good question. I'm not saying it was a bad question, but when you have the director of scouting on the air and you asked him if you'd won the lottery, right, and you had the number one pick, would you have still selected Shane Wright? What would your reaction have been if he would have said, nah, probably not?
Well,
he would have taken somebody
I think
else
because
you saw how pissed off he was when the Canadiens passed on him,
right,
that guy.
Right. I think we probably knew what his answer was going to be, but I wanted to hear how he delivered the answer. And I asked the same question to Benton, honestly, on Thursday.
Right.
And Benton was much more, I mean, he was much more hesitant.
Really?
Benton was like, don't know if I would have taken Wright first. So,
well, you know, look, there's a reason why the guy fell to four, obviously. I mean, I do think it's easy for someone to say yes, you know, after the fact that the guy is, you know, it's like asking Pete Carroll. I mean, you know, if you could do it all over again, would you have drafted? Well, sure, we would have drafted Wilson or Wagner or whatever. I think, though, that this guy fits exactly what they need. And I like the fact that he fell to four. He looks like he's pissed off. I love that stare down of the Canadiens draft table after they took him. But I don't know. Did Benton tell you what I have heard from people around the league is if another Czechoslovakian player was available, that would have been the selection. You'll hear about it more on the Kraken Podcast Network.
But it was
about what did he tell you? Did he give you a different player?
No, he was just he was very hesitant on just saying, oh, yes, they would have taken him number one. He was very hesitant because there was a couple other guys there that the Kraken obviously really liked. But, you know, we were talking earlier today about the faces of the franchise going forward for the Mariners.
Yes, the Batman
and Robin.
Now you
got two. You got Batman and Robin already without question. You got Beniers and Wright, and boom, you're good for 10 years there. Yeah.
So who is the next Batman and Robin of the Seahawks?
Well, you would assume it's DK and whoever the next quarterback that's drafted is.
Okay. All right. So so we don't have it right now.
No.
That combo is not on the football team. Not here.
And I mean, right now, it's probably Quandre and Jamal, right?
Maybe neither one of them are on the football team right now. I mean, is DK Metcalf here in 4 years and 3 years from now? Do we have any hesitation saying the Seahawks are going to give DK Metcalf a contract that makes him happy? And I totally agree, by the way, with what Randy Mueller said about the Seahawks' best offer. I do think their best offer is on the table. There might be a couple of maybe semantics here and there where they tweak this, add some bonus money here, bump a couple of dollars up here and there. But I totally agree with what he said about if DK Metcalf is holding out because he's hoping for a better offer from the Seahawks than the one that's on the table, forget about it.
Yeah. It's not going to happen. And I totally agree with Randy. And if that's
history
the Seahawks,
says he's right.
That's Seahawks stance, then I totally agree with the Seahawks. The Seahawks have been very, very fair paying their drafted superstars. They've been very fair. And so if DK doesn't think it's fair, then he'll be the first one to turn it down because all the other ones took the contract.
Right.
Every one of them.
Yeah, I mean, can we know John Schneider and Pete Carroll, I think, fairly well. And the fans, people, I mean, all of us know them well, whether we're on the air listening, whatever. Can you ever imagine a scenario where Pete Carroll and John Schneider find out that DK Metcalf is holding out and they say, you know what? All right, here's a couple million more bucks.
Nope.
I mean, that's just not how they operate.
And also, you don't want to put like Randy said, I mean, you don't want to pay $25+ million for a non-quarterback. You just don't.
Right. Well, Scott Myers on Twitter, you know Scott Myers on Twitter? At Scott V. Myers, V for Victor or Victory, on Twitter writes, Hugh is never wrong. He's the GOAT to me, except about DK. DK has coordination issues that make his ceiling lower than others. That's a different story than being able to run every route, because what you're talking about is dropping passes, maybe not being able to get your hands in the right spot to grab a football. I think he can run every route in the route tree, but I do think sometimes his focus is lacking, and that's why you see the mistakes you see out of him.
Well, and you talk about him being...
And I also think he lets his emotions get the best of him sometimes.
Right, and hurt him in a playoff game against the Rams a couple years ago. You talk about him being unguardable, and there are certainly plays where he is unguardable, and I agree with you. They should take more shots deep, even if DK Metcalf is covered. Right. He is unguardable in those situations. But you want to talk about really unguardable? Cooper Kupp's unguardable.
Oh, for sure.
Devontae Adams is unguardable. Well, DK can't do the stuff those guys can do.
But it's not, when you talk about being unguardable, I don't even think about post routes and fly patterns. I think about like sending him to the sideline one-on-one against a 5'10" corner and throwing up a jump ball for a first down.
Yep.
If DK Metcalf, if a cornerback is playing DK Metcalf 5 yards off the ball on 3rd and 3, they should just get DK Metcalf the ball on every single play.
Yeah.
Just flip it out there, let him break a tackle, and get the first down every single time. Throw it up to the sideline. Put the ball 7.5 feet in the air where only he can get it. That's what I'm talking about when I talk about DK Metcalf being unguardable. I mean, look, you know, down the field, a lot of it depends on the speed of the corner, you know, the closing angle, the quarterback putting the ball in the money, things like that. But when you're talking about one-on-one on a quick out to DK Metcalf, either on the sideline or right at the line of scrimmage or even behind the line of scrimmage, where all he's got to do is break one tackle or beat one guy to a ball for a first down, to me, that's easy money.
Yeah.
That's candy from a baby. Why don't they do more of that with him?
I don't know. You talk about third and one. I don't remember the game it was. It was late in the season last year, and Russ was in a shotgun, and they had three wides, and DK had the middle wide open on a slant, and he actually ran a slant. I yelled before the play. I told my son, I was like, just throw it to DK on a three-yard slant, and it's a first down. And what do you know? Russ took one step and threw it to DK on a slant. I was like, why doesn't that happen multiple times a game? It would set up everything else.
Well, I'm going to say something here that's going to irritate a lot of people, and I know people don't want to hear sometimes this stuff, but I wonder if there were certain times where Russell Wilson couldn't see him because of his height, and maybe Drew Lock can, maybe Geno Smith can.
Or froze him out, as Hugh assessed.
Maybe, yeah, right.
But you said on the air he believes that Russell Wilson froze DK out.
Maybe he did freeze him out, and maybe he's right, and maybe he couldn't see. Maybe Pete Carroll and Russell Wilson were not on the same page with that guy. I just don't know why any offensive coordinator in the NFL would not look at DK Metcalf's size, physical size, literally, not figuratively, and think that's a guy that most corners in the NFL cannot handle right off the line of scrimmage, 5 yards off the ball. And why they didn't do that more often is beyond me. Hell, I'd like to see the guy run the ball. Swear to God, fly sweeps, whatever, get the ball to DK Metcalf on third and one around the corner. He's got incredible speed.
Let's see if he can turn a corner. I don't know. He might, he might, you know, he might turn a corner like those cargo ships out there.
Well,
it's possible.
Yeah, I don't know. There's, what is it, what's the drill they do? The three cone drill, whatever it is at the combine.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people would tell you that his agility is just fine. I just don't think they've been able to tap it yet. They have not been able, for whatever reason, whether it's because of Russell Wilson. How great would it be to play that game against the Broncos in week number one, have Drew Lock target DK Metcalf 20 times, 18 catches, 200 yards, 2 touchdowns, gets the ball 6 times on third down, converts every single time, and stuffs it right in Russell's face. I mean, come on. That's a perfect scenario.
Yeah,
even better than beating the Blue Jays 4 in a row in front of their own damn fans. 538. Hey, what the hell happened to the Sounders against Portland the other day? You raised the banner. That's great, but then the Sounders kick our butt, or the Timbers kick their butt. We'll come back and talk to Brian Schmetzer. What's going on with Raul Ruiz Diaz, the whole spiel? That's coming up next. Our weekly visit with Brian Schmetzer coming up right here on 93.3 KJR-FM.
Hear us anywhere, anytime on Alexa or Google Play at Sports Radio 93.3 KJR-FM and on the iHeartRadio app. Now back to Softy and Dick.
All right, our weekly conversation. I always look forward to this win, lose, or draw with our next guest. We like it better when they win, but always fun to have our next guest on the radio show with us every Tuesday at 5:45. Joining us from Nashville. That's a hell of a night to have a night to yourself to go out and enjoy the nightlife.
Absolutely.
Huh? I wonder if Brian's going to hit a couple of bars while he's out there. Maybe bring a couple of teammates or players with him. Brian Schmetzer with us from Nashville, where the Sounders are getting ready for a match with Nashville FC tomorrow. Bed check at 9 o'clock, or do you get to let the guys kind of blow some steam off tonight, pal? What do you think?
Bed check for sure after the performance against Portland. Strict 9 o'clock bedtime.
Yeah, you know what? If you won the match, maybe you get till 10, but you lose, you go to bed at 9. Well, look, I don't mean to be the guy that keeps that conversation going, but what the hell happened this weekend against the Timbers, man? Talk about it now.
Well, you know, it was such a gut punch because, you know, look, we knew they were going to be motivated because of the banner drop and, you know, the hoopla and all that. I knew they were going to be extra motivated. I actually told the team before the game that, you know, we actually don't need the banner drop. That's just icing on the cake. I mean, the rivalry's already there. It's already built in. It's already baked in. Just be prepared for a motivated team. And then we came out, Softy, and I thought we were good, but one mistake, or, you know, if you're a Portland fan, you can say one good goal kind of sunk the ship a little bit, because once they got up to 1-0, you could control a game a little bit. And then, you know, look, Raul missed a goal from 10 yards out. He's never going to miss that ever in his lifetime again. We had some other chances. And then, you know, then we get the red card, and that kind of doomed us, you know, even more. So tough afternoon for us and the fans.
Do you rethink the timing of the banner drop? Because Stefan was questioned after the match, and I'm not going to say he criticized it, but he did question it, and he said the team was never consulted. Should they have been?
well, maybe the team never was consulted. But look, Dick, I get it. I mean, drop the banner, you know, kick your arch rival's ass. It's a great it's a great afternoon. It's a great weekend. It just, you know, we didn't kick their ass. They right. they kicked our ass. So, yeah. you know, it was
one minor nugget, right?
That's the second part of the equation. Well, you can take care of that next time you play them, though. But Brian Schmetzer, again, is with us on the radio show. And I want to go back to the 39th minute. And I think you know where I'm going with this. Clear penalty. Nico Ladero tackled on the box. I mean, everybody agrees. You know, Stevie Wonder tweeted it was an obvious no call. That should have been called. We all saw it. What was your conversation like with the officials during that situation? And I have a follow-up on that as well. So take it from there.
Okay. So I asked the fourth official if they were reviewing it. We got it in our little headsets that it was a clear penalty.
Right.
Softy, you know me by now. I don't complain about the referees. I don't think that the referees cost us games and all of that. But that was a bad call or a bad non-call. I mean, they should have looked at it. The guys up in the VAR booth needed to tell the center referee to go look at that. And I believe had the center referee looked at that, he might have changed his mind.
Yeah. Well, I guess here's the problem is that you got this Daniel Radford guy who apparently is sitting in New York City, right, with VAR. And there have been numerous occasions where he has been on VAR for your matches and things have not gone your way. On a lot of occasions, they've been obvious miscalls on his part. Do you have any recourse to talk to the league and say, look, I would prefer that we not have this guy on VAR while we are playing because obviously something's going on with this cat? Can you do that?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, look, we can complain, and I'm sure Craig Weibel and all of, you know, the guys that are assessing the referees are going to use this as a talking point, as a coaching point. Hopefully it gets the referees better. If there's any sniff, you know, because he was the guy, red card wedding down at Starfire, Dempsey rips up his notebook. I mean, if the guy's still harboring ill will from 2015, then the guy's got a serious problem.
Right.
So he's just got to do his job. He's a professional.
Do you realize he has a Twitter account and it's at I hate Brian Schmetzer's guts on Twitter? Are you aware of that? I mean, that's inappropriate, don't you think, Coach?
It's unprofessional.
Yeah, I mean, look, there's that conspiracy theory out there. I always try and think the best of people. You know, referees had a hard job, but he blew the call. He totally blew it. When he sees it again, hopefully he'll raise his hand up and say, you know what? I got that one wrong.
Yeah.
Well, other than tackling Nico, what does Portland do to neutralize him? Because he has one goal in 17 games against the Timbers. How is that possible?
Interesting stat, Dick. Did you look at the assists? Because I think he must have some assists, but that's interesting. Look, we've had Dempsey used to score a lot of goals against the Timbers, Montero, Raul. Maybe Nico doesn't have to score against the Timbers. But that's an interesting stat line. I didn't know that. Thanks for giving that little nugget to me.
Yeah, Jackson just updated it. So now it's 18 games because I didn't count this Portland game. So it's one goal in 18 games. He does have 7 assists. So he is, you know, he's distributing at least, but he's not scoring.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, look, we've got a pretty balanced team. I mean, I put my best guys out there, you know, Raul and Jordan and Christian and Albert. You know, I don't think it was just Nico having an off night. I actually think when I rewatched the game, the first half, except for that goal that they scored, the first half wasn't that horrible.
Yeah.
And had Jackson not got the red card in, you know, 45 seconds into the second half, you know, there's a good chance we would have, you know, scored one on him.
Right. Well, Brian Schmetzer with us. Sounders, Nashville tomorrow, kickoff 5:30, pregame 5 local time, and then Chicago 4:30. On Saturday, what's going on with Raul? Clearly was not comfortable during the match against the Timbers. I know you had an MRI. Any news you can share with us there?
Yeah, so his MRI came back today, and he actually injured the other hamstring that he was working on coming back from the injury. So he's got a little strain in there. We don't have an exact timeline because he's going to go through some other testing that we're going to have done. So I don't have an exact timeline, but it is not a full-blown blowout type of hamstring. It's a strain, but we got to get him right, Softy. We can't keep going through this time and time again. So we're trying to pull out all the stops with his treatment, and we'll probably bring him back a little bit more gingerly. You know, his return to play protocol will probably be, you know, 30 minutes, 45 minutes. You know, we'll ease him back in.
Any snubs from the All-Star roster that are particularly upsetting to you?
Steph Fry. How about that?
Yeah.
I mean, Steph, I don't know how much more consistent that guy can be. I mean, maybe they're not counting the Champions League games. I don't know if that counts in the voting or not, but the game he played against NYCFC was unbelievable. Nico's, you know, comeback strong. I mean, we had, what was it, 6, 7, 8 guys last year, which was an anomaly. I mean, we had a great start to the year, so maybe they're punishing us a little bit. I don't know. But there's certainly a lot of guys on the team that have played well to get us to win a CONCACAF Champions League medal.
Well, we're having that kind of same conversation about the Mariners because Ty France for now is not on the American League All-Star team. And I wonder if that could actually serve Steph Fry well. I mean, this is a guy that plays his ass off already and has a chip on his shoulder to begin with. But now that he's going to go in the second half of the year and know that he was snubbed for an All-Star game appearance, could that potentially maybe motivate him even more and benefit your team?
He's a pretty grounded guy, Softy.
Yeah.
I mean, and good for the Mariners for kicking ass these days. I mean, that's good to see. But, you know, Steph's a pretty grounded guy. I mean, he takes that in stride. He's been a good pro. I think his work at the end of his career, when people actually tally up the final numbers, the final stats of how many trophies he's won, how many games he's played, he's been durable, what's his save percentage over, you know, a 15-year career, he'll get his due for sure.
Nationals got you by 1 point right now in the table. So give us a little preview of what we're going to see tomorrow.
And Chicago, because we're not going to talk to you until next week.
That's right.
Yeah, well, look, both teams have struggled a little bit as of late. Nashville came in and beat us 1-0 first game of the year. They were a very consistent team, hard to beat. And they haven't had a good run of form. I think their coach, Gary Smith, does a good job, but he's, you know, he's tinkering a little bit with his lineup. He doesn't have a set lineup like he had last year. And then, you know, Chicago, my good friend Ezra Hendrickson, look, I wish him well, just not on Saturday.
Yep.
You know, he struggled with some key injuries to some key guys. So both games are, you know, games that are tough road games, but winnable games.
Yeah, listen, man, great stuff. And Daniel Radford's on line one, wants to talk to you when the interview's over. So we'll patch you through, okay?
I'm happy to swear at him as soon as I get him on the phone.
This is why we love you.
Oh, you're the best.
Never, ever change. All right, go get him tomorrow. We'll talk in a week, Coach. Thanks, pal.
So good.
Okay.
You bet. Brian Schmetzer with us on the radio show. And, you know, I mean, Dick, I would sit here and I would ask Jackson for his opinion on that no call in the 39th minute against Portland. But really, there's no reason because, as you know,
Jackson doesn't know Dick.
Not really worth it. So, all right, we'll get a break. That is great stuff, man, from Brian Schmetzer. Just unfiltered. I mean, this is the way it should be. Right? That's the way it should be. I mean, how often do you, when was the last time you even heard a cliche out of Brian Schmetzer's mouth when he came on this show?
And
awesome.
We obviously love to talk to him after wins because we want the Sounders to win. But you know what?
When it's raw.
He might be better after losses. Well,
I think it's great. Maybe we can get him and Radford in the ring for like a celebrity boxing match. Is he a big guy, Radford?
No.
Do we know?
That would end fast.
Schmetzer would kick his ass?
Yes.
Really?
That would end very fast.
Okay.
Really?
Well, he's motivated.
There's a lot of
sure.
anger. There's a
by
lot
the way,
of anger.
Who's is somebody's phone ringing, or is that me, by the way? Or is that you?
Not me.
I keep hearing dings. Is that in my head?
Yes.
Is it possible it's my head? It's
very
in my head.
Possible you're in
oh, my God. I'm getting old. All right. 5:58. We're going to head down to Charlotte, North Carolina, by the way. Talk about Baker Mayfield going down to the Panthers. Does that mean that potentially, maybe, just maybe, Sam Darnold could become available? We'll find out. We're going to head to Charlotte next on Sports Radio 93.3 KJRFM.
Now, from the Star Rentals Sports Desk, your 93.3 KJRFM Sports Headlines.
Hey, happy Tuesday, kiddos. Headlines on Softy and Dick, of course, are brought to you by our friends at VenueKings.com.
I'm here in the freezing cold getting free chicken sandwiches.
Are you looking for Mariners tickets second half of the year starting against the Astros next Friday? VenueKings.com has great seats available, by the way. Be sure and use code Softy at checkout every time for a discount. At VenueKings.com. If you're planning on watching the Mariner game tonight, I'm sorry. Yeah. Tonight's game has been rained out in Washington, D.C. They'll do it again tomorrow, 9 o'clock and 3 o'clock our time, with a split doubleheader in Washington, D.C. I really hope the Mariners get a chance to face Josiah Gray, by the way, the starting pitcher for the Nationals. You know why?
Why?
Josiah Gray is 5-0 with a 2.14 ERA and a 5.72 OPS on the road. He's 2-5 with a 6.42 ERA and a 9.01 OPS against at home.
That's bizarre.
With 11 home runs and 8 starts. He's been tatered at home. So we'll see about the pitching matchup. But no game tonight. 9 o'clock, 3 o'clock our time. Doubleheader in D.C. tomorrow.
Count them, five Storm players were in double figures today, led by Breanna Stewart's 19 and 83-74 win at Climate Pledge over Dallas. Seattle now 15-5 in their last 20. They're tied for first in the West and one game back of the best overall record in the league.
Team's playing great. You know the problem is with that franchise, by the way?
We all know.
TV play-by-play guys.
We all know that.
Baseball. Pirates lead the Marlins 3-2, bottom of the eighth. Yankees blanking the Reds 2-0, bottom three from the Bronx. Blue Jays up on the Phillies 4-3, bottom six from the Rogers Center. Red Sox doubling up Tampa 2-1, bottom six from the Trop. And the White Sox blanking the Guardians 4-0, bottom six in Cleveland. By the way, big series in the NL East. Mets lead the Braves 1-0, mid-5 in Atlanta.
Tiger Woods denouncing the LIV Tour, saying it was a lesser brand, and that those that have gone to the tour have turned their backs on what a allowed them to get there in the first place.
Tiger, do you think guys that have left the PGA Tour for the LIV Tour are douchebags?
I do.
Okay. NFL, Rob Gronkowski announcing his retirement June 21st. For those that were holding out hope that he was just playing around, he reiterated today he's done with football. Ty France, by the way, had a chance today to get named as a replacement for the All-Star team. Yordan Alvarez of the Astros is off the team with a wrist injury, apparently. So they took J.D. Martinez for now in his spot. So as of right now, with a week to go, no Ty France for the All-Star team. That Tiger Woods thing is interesting. Tiger, you think it's appropriate for you to share those opinions to the country?
I do.
Okay, that's fine. I think he should, you know, speak his mind. He's Tiger damn Woods, and I agree with that. But Tiger Woods, and you said it there, said that players are turning their backs on what gave them a chance to be great. And he's exactly right.
Yes.
I mean, the PGA Tour made all these players who they are. Without the PGA Tour, they would not have the money, the fame, the recognition. It also doesn't mean it's wrong for them to leave the PGA Tour, because using that thinking, you could do that with any walk of life. Mm-hmm. Every person who works in radio, who got their start at KJR, should then stay here forever and never, ever, ever expand their horizons and look for a better opportunity.
It's kind of me, you, that, and, it's kind of me, you and Jackson, actually.
Right. Well, and look at us. Look at us. I mean, go tell that to David Locke and all the guys out there that have moved on. I mean, it's any walk of life or any business, right? I mean, does Russell Wilson owe it to the Seahawks to stay with them forever because they were the ones that drafted him in the third round? Of course not.
I think if the LIV Tour was organized the way the PGA Tour is, then I don't think there would be a leg to stand on for anybody to criticize him. But I think where the criticism, I think, is legitimate is the fact that they are moving to an exhibition league.
Right.
That's where the criticism is. And I think it's going to be very interesting because in
who's
the U.S.
moving to an exhibition
the LIV league? Golfers are moving to an exhibition league.
Right.
They're moving to a pay before you play league instead of a pay after you play league.
Right, but the better they play, the more they make, right?
Right, but they got the money that they got up front is what we're talking about. I mean, all these guys got chunks of change up front before they ever played a tournament. Now, some got more than others, but DJ 125, Phil 250, I mean, all these big-name guys, and even the marginal-name guys, you have to imagine, the sliding scale, they're still getting $40, $50 million just to play in the league.
Okay, but then even more so, why would you stay then on the PGA Tour? I mean, you're. I'm not saying you're mad, but you're saying that they're moving to an exhibition league, meaning they're already paid before they play.
Right.
Even more reason to leave the PGA Tour. Now I don't even have to worry about how I perform.
And like I said, and I've been.
How can you criticize them for that?
I don't criticize, but I can criticize the PGA players because I can criticize the PGA. Let me rewind here. Got me all. Blah, 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 blah. Okay. What the PGA Tour players are saying, and they're exactly right in their criticism, that, dude, you're not competing anymore. That's the problem. And so I can stand behind the PGA players who are saying that because they're right. These other guys aren't competing anymore.
Yeah.
Really?
Well, I don't know. I mean, this is longer than a three-minute conversation. We're going to have a guest on from Charlotte joining us in a few minutes talking about Baker Mayfield.
Let's talk about tomorrow leading up to the Open.
In Carolina. I just think what you're talking about, like, for example, an actor or actress gets paid a certain amount of money to make a movie, mm-hmm. right? You and I get paid a certain amount of money to come to work and perform. These guys are now getting paid a certain amount of money to come to work and perform. And there's more money to be made if they compete and do well, but they're getting paid to work. Mm-hmm. There are some guys in the PGA Tour that show up to work, bring ratings to television, and don't get paid anything because they miss the cut, right? And they go home with nothing. And they've lost money. They spend money on hotels, airfare, the whole thing, mm-hmm. and they get jack squat. So I don't know. I kind of feel like the LIV Tour, the way they have their financial structure set up, is kind of more of a reflection of real life. People go to work and they get paid. That's it.
Yeah,
You get paid. Jackson comes to work, he gets paid. These guys go to work and they're getting paid. And the better they do, the better we do, the more money we can make. Mm-hmm. So how is that any different than the average Joe that's drawn a paycheck?
Well, because it's funny money. I mean, iHeartMedia has a budget to pay us.
So that's the problem.
This is funny money. There is no budget. That's the
problem. Right. Well, good for them. Good for them. What if iHeart started paying us funny money? I mean, do we begrudge people for making too much money? Should we be the ones that decide for somebody how much is enough?
Right. No, again, and I'm not anti these LIV guys. I'm not. I know you're not. I do think, though, that a lot of them, almost all of them, are going to struggle this week because they haven't gone through the grinds of competitive golf like the other ones have all summer long.
Aren't you curious, though, about that? I'm very curious to see how those guys do. I mean, what if they do the exact opposite and they all kick ass this weekend? What if it has no real impact and it's just like any other Open and there's guys that come and guys
that go?
They
struggled in the U.S. Open. Almost to a man, they struggled in the U.S. Open.
I will say this. So who's got the TV rights for the Open this weekend?
NBC.
Is it NBC? Yeah. I wonder what the ratings will look like, comparatively speaking, to previous years, if there's now a little more interest in this thing because of that angle. Because now you get to see all these other guys that Tiger just ripped a new one and maybe eventually paired up together over the weekend. Can you imagine if Tiger Woods and Rory were paired up with DJ or Bryson DeChambeau on Sunday?
Oh, that'd be fun.
That would be awesome.
I hope one of these LIV guys does well, actually. I hope because I kind of want to see the circus on Sunday.
I'm totally with you. That's exactly my point. That there's now even a look, you don't need reasons to watch the Open, but now there's another reason.
Well, the odds will say that at least one of these guys, I mean, you're still talking about, 15 of the top 100 golfers in the world. Chances are at least one of these guys is going to be in the top 10 knocking on the door on Sunday.
I'm curious to see, and maybe it's going to be unfair to draw conclusions after one tournament. Maybe you have to let it play out for 5 years and get some data. But I just think in the end, it's going to be another reason to watch this thing and see what develops. Well, I'll tell you what, the Panthers have given us another reason to watch them. The circus has come to town in Carolina. Seahawks passed on Baker Mayfield, but the Panthers did not. Brett Jensen from WBT in Charlotte with us. And Baker Mayfield is there. Brett, how are things going so far with the brand new quarterback in Charlotte?
Well, he had his press conference today, and he spoke for about 27 minutes with the media, I think was the official time. He came on right after the general manager spoke with us for about another 30 minutes prior to that. So, look, Baker today said everything that you thought he would say. He didn't have a horrible press conference. He said all the right things. He didn't give, coach speak or player speak or cliches. He gave actual answers but said all the right things. And so if you're a fan of the Carolina Panthers, it gives you hope that, okay, maybe they have a quarterback because it's clear it's not Sam Darnold. And it's clear the Carolina Panthers don't think it's Sam Darnold. As a matter of fact, That's what I asked the general manager today. And I was like, look, it's been clear from day one, like you brought in Cam Newton last year. That didn't work out. You were all over Deshaun Watson. That didn't work out. And you've been trying to get Baker Mayfield since, you know, before the draft. And you finally got it. What does that say about Sam Darnold? And they pretty much admitted, hey, we're trying to improve our quarterback play. We're trying to upgrade. And so they hope that it's Baker. And so, and people here, I got to be honest with you, the people here are somewhat indifferent about it because, like, well, you know, we heard the same thing about Teddy Bridgewater. Oh, we heard the same thing about Sam Darnold. Oh, we heard the same thing about Cam Newton last year. Now we're hearing the same thing about Baker Mayfield, how he's going to turn the franchise around. And so this will be four different – I mean, if Sam Darnold starts game one, this will be four different starting quarterbacks in the last 4 years to start game one.
Hmm. What was the hope for Sam Darnold when he was acquired, and where did he fall short the most of that hope?
I will give you a perfect example of what they thought or what they had hoped, because we know how Adam Gase, I believe, had, you know, not done a very good job with mm-hmm. quarterbacks. And so they were hoping, honestly, that they were going to get Ryan Tannehill 2.0. Leaves Miami, Gase does extremely well once he gets to Tennessee. That's what they thought they were and hoping they were going to get. Oh, you know, we'll have a better running back and we've got better wide receivers. Well, the problem is, Your running back hasn't played in 2 years. Your offensive line was one of the worst in the NFL, worse than what he had up with the New York Jets. And so they did not get what they were hoping they were going to get. And a lot of it, it's Carolina's fault because they just didn't have anything that they thought. You know, when Tannehill went to Tennessee, he went with an offensive line and receivers and running backs. He didn't have any of that here. I mean, he had DJ Moore and Robbie Anderson, two fine, decent receivers.
Yep.
But he had no offensive line, yep. No tight end, and no running back.
Yep. Well, that's why I wonder if Sam Darnold can still play. And I wonder if he gets let go by Carolina at some point. You know, people like to kick around a lot of conspiracy theories, Brett. Again, Brett Jensen, WBT in Charlotte, is with us on the air. Pete Carroll's a USC guy. Sam Darnold, USC guy. Yeah, something comes available. Maybe there's a little bit of a potential for a meeting of the minds here in Seattle. Because what you're describing is a guy in Sam Darnold who never really has gotten a shot to play with anybody of significance. 3 years in New York with nothing, and 1 year in Carolina with nothing. Can the guy still play?
You know, that's the big question. And I don't think a lot of people have the answer to that. And, you know, and there's a lot of similarities between Baker and Sam Darnold. One was taken number one. The other one was taken number three in the 2018 draft. But Baker Mayfield said today, he goes, yeah, I've had four different playbooks and four different offensive coordinators in 4 years. And Sam Darnold's pretty much have had the exact same thing. And so all these different – there's been no continuity. They haven't been able to do the same playbook back-to-back years and have the same offensive coordinators. And so – that in and of itself is a problem. So you just don't know what these type of players would be in year two or year three of the same system, because it hasn't been the same system for either one of them. And with Sam Darnold, can he play? I mean, he's got – everyone knows he's got better physical ability than Baker Mayfield. No one doubts that. But what we saw last year was it was almost like he was scared to make a mistake. He was scared to pull the trigger because of all the media crush that he got crushed up in New York. He was scared to pull the trigger. And so it got to be a problem here last year where he wasn't throwing deep balls because he was scared of throwing an interception, and he didn't want to do that. And so because he kept saying, well, you know, you learn that you can't score if you're turning the ball over. And so he wouldn't throw the deep ball, and it became a really big issue that were, so much so that Matt Rhule was discussing it, and they had to have a sit-down with Sam going, dude, you got to start throwing the ball down the field.
Mm. Scott Fitter, the competition until they give Baker the job at the end of training camp. Which is it?
You know, that's a great question. I mean, you guys are familiar with Scott Fitter, you know, having come from Seattle. And, you know, that's the thing. You know, there are two ways to look at it. There really are. Just like you said, okay, we'll take him at his word because Carolina Panthers are paying Sam Darnold $18.6 million. They're only paying Baker $4.8 million. And they only gave up a fifth-round pick for Baker. They gave up a second and a third to get Sam Darnold. And so, you know, a lot of times you go, oh, well, you play the guy that's making the most money. Well, maybe, maybe not. So, I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen on that. And, you know, most people seem to forget game one, at Carolina on 9/11, Cleveland Browns.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. Well, again, Brett Jensen, WBT in Charlotte with us on the air. Baker Mayfield now in Carolina competing for now. As Scott Fitterer, the former Seahawk executive under John Schneider, has said for the starting job. Does Matt Rhule, though, know what he's doing? You know, it's a guy that knew what he was doing in college for sure at Baylor. He's won 10 games in 2 years. I would assume the seat is pretty hot for him this season. Do you have confidence that Matt Rhule is the guy to get the best out of Baker Mayfield or whatever quarterback they end up turning to?
Well, I mean, they're getting ready to have, in the Matt Rhule era, I think he's had 3 quarterbacks start a game in his first 2 years. And you assume Baker will do it at some point this year, so that'll be 4 quarterbacks in 3 years that he's had to start. You know, I don't know. You know, the jury's still obviously out. Everyone, I talked about this earlier this morning on another show about how, you know, even nationally they're saying that Matt Rhule starts the season with the hottest hot seat for all coaches. And, you know, that's the question. Can he coach? Here's the thing, though. There were a lot of people that thought he was going to get fired last year, and I was never one of them, because when he came out of college, the only way he was going to leave college was a ridiculous contract. Well, he got a ridiculous contract. He didn't get a 5-year contract. He got a 7-year contract for someone who'd never coached in the NFL except 1 year as a lowly assistant to an assistant with the New York Giants. And so he came out with a 7-year contract, fully guaranteed. I think he makes $49 million over 7 years, fully guaranteed. And David Tepper, the owner, yes, you know, until the Walton family bought the Broncos, the richest guy in the NFL, the richest owner in the NFL. But he is frugal with his money in terms of he's not Steinbrenner just throwing away money, you know, bad money after good or good money after bad. So I never thought he was going to get fired. And if he goes another 5-12 this year, then odds are he's probably going to get fired, even though he's never had a quarterback either.
What's the likelihood that the Seahawks are competing with Carolina in the 2023 draft for a quarterback in the first round?
I don't think so. I don't think with Carolina. And the reason I say that, you know, they drafted Matt Carroll in the 3rd round this year, the kid out of Ole Miss. The one that Chris Sims, you know, who's become like the college quarterback guru, who's been so right on so many things over the last 5 years, that was his favorite quarterback coming out of college. And so many people really like Matt Carroll. Matt Corral. And so, you know, I think they're going to stick with what they got, because I think they're kind of hoping that either Baker turns out to be what they want and they sign him to a 3-year contract, 4-year deal, or they just move on down the road and go with their 3rd-round draft pick that they took this year. And so, you know, I'm not of the mindset that they're going to try and draft a quarterback in the first round next year. I'm really not.
Yeah. Hey, man, thanks for doing this. I appreciate it. I was kind of secretly hoping that Baker would come to Seattle just so my co-host's head could blow up on the air, and I now will not be able to see that in person.
Sorry.
So have fun with Baker down there. It should be entertaining for sure, if anything else. Enjoy it. Tell Sharon we said hello, by the way, and we'll talk down the road, buddy.
Thanks
pal.
Sounds a lot. Sounds good, guys. I appreciate it.
You got it. Brett Jensen, WBT in Charlotte. Baker Mayfield, Sam Darnold competing for the starting quarterback job. There's an opening on the American League All-Star team. Did it go to Ty France? We'll find out next on Sports Radio 93.3 KJRFM.